Well, I think it's about that time. This is Rod Wilson, Director of Marketing and Operations at BAM Investor. I want to welcome everyone for joining us on this call. Appreciate your time, and do appreciate you international callers for dialing in. Jim, are you on the phone?
I am.
Okay, we got that working this time. That's great. So, with that, Jim, I think we'll just jump into it. You know, you and I were talking a few weeks ago, and you'd mentioned that you wanted to have a call scheduled for today, March 9th. You know, at that point, what did you see in the market, and then, you know, what's going on now in the market?
Yeah, hey, thanks, Rod, and hi to everybody. Thanks again for calling in, you guys, and ladies, too. The reason I wanted to have this call scheduled for the 9th was that this is just in front of the, you know, the most bearish window that that the model's displaying. This is a window that was identified, you know, way back in October. I certainly expected us to be trading at much lower levels moving into the window, but the fact that we got had the first nice price crack off the high in January, before they bottomed them in the first week of February, was at least encouraging. Now, the idea that we've been able to trade to new highs on the year in certain indices doesn't change anything. I've had some questions about that over the past several days here. That doesn't change anything. And the reason that why that doesn't change anything is because we're not trading at new all-time highs. If we were, if this conversation was taking place in October 2007 when we were trading into new all-time highs, then the odds of a crash off a new all-time high are very rare. You know, it happened in 1929, but it's not normal. And even in 87, you had you know, you had a high made in August, you declined, and then you made a counter trend rally, and then you crashed. So that's more the situation we have here. And because the market is in the bigger picture, just bouncing off the March 2009 low into the recent highs, the fact that certain indices have moved to a new high in a year doesn't affect this crash call. We're also in a unique situation where I can use downside price measurements based on some of the indices that have not traded to new highs on the year, and that's very helpful for us. So let me talk briefly about the comparisons of the 1987 period to today and this year's time frame, and also a little bit about what some of you might hear people referring to as Mutual Fund Monday. I'll actually start with the Mutual Fund Monday dynamic. So this is something that you guys are going to see talked about in the monthly report. And all it is it's a sort of a Pavlovian response that's been built into the market over the past couple months, where we've had a gap open on Monday so frequently, it's pretty much trained traders and investors alike to avoid moving into Friday short. And a lot of people, especially you know, pretty savvy options traders, tend to not put new positions on a Friday or even take positions off on a Friday, because you get a little bit of that decay over the weekend. Well, I can pretty much say to a person, all the traders that I keep in touch with are in the same situation, where they're taking bearish bets off on Friday, because they're assuming whoever it is that's in here buying on during the Sunday session and then the early pre-market hours of Monday morning, that they're going to continue this and gap the market up. Well, what it does is it sets the market up for a catastrophic gap open on Monday if we have any bad news that hits over a weekend. So normally the dynamic is that if you go into a Monday with a decent amount of short interest on the books, then those are the people who are covering short trades into a gap down open on a Monday, and it sort of acts as a safety net for the market. And since so many people have been trained, like I said, over the past 2 months to not put themselves in a position to, you know, be losing money first thing Monday morning at the opening bell, That safety net doesn't exist. So it's made the market even more dangerous than it would have been, which is interesting to me given this how bearish the model is going into this period. As far as the 1987, the comparison between 1987 price action and today's market, it's so similar that it blows me away. And actually, when you have something that's so perfect, that usually means it's not going to happen. You know, everything that I pass along to you all is based on my model alone, and my model is not based on price pattern recognition. So this is just sort of something that I've been following, and it's constantly amazing me how closely we're following this 87 pattern. For those of you who want to track this, you can look at a daily chart. It's a little bit better if you can look at an hourly, a 60-minute bar chart, and to go back to the 87 period and track the decline off the August top into the first low and then the false breakout that the market had into the final 2 days before the 10-session crash period of 87. Matter of fact, another dynamic that happened over the past 2 days, which I really didn't expect, is that we've traded in an incredibly flat range, and that's exactly what we did in 87, the last 2 days before the market, rolled over and went into its 10-session crash, rather. The other similarity is that the S&P in 87 moved up within 3% of the August high before the 10-day crash. We've done the same thing here, actually a little bit better than that. We're closer to the January high than 3%. So it's interesting to me. It's something that I'm not basing any of my call on, but it is pretty uncanny and unreal to me, given the fact that we're heading into the bearish window into March 17th for the first window. And then especially given the fact that we've generated a window into April that's every bit as bearish as this crash window into March 17th. If we do follow the 87 pattern, then what we should see here is as we trade into the 17th, we should see a break of the February low. And at that point, you would expect the sentiment to be one of surprise, but that even the bears would most likely think that was the end of the correction. And then, of course, you'd continue down and head straight through support, perceived support levels, as if they're not even there. So that's what I'm tracking right now. Like I said, you guys can do overlays and go back and check that 87 period and look at it. I can tell you that my speed line studies indicate that we could have a crash every bit as significant as the 1987 period. The price targets the downside if the market were to roll over and crash do indicate a move back below the 680 level on the S&P cash, and that would be into the March bear zones. So the only element that's missing here is velocity, and I'll be able to get some velocity readings assuming we roll over and start to sell off into the 17th. Then I'll be able to tell you guys whether or not realistically I think we're facing something catastrophic, or if we're just facing something that might take us down to the let's say the 944 magnet on the S&P cash, or even the 842 magnet. But I'll be able to tell you all that and pass the information along closer to March 17th. Okay, Rod, let's get into the questions.
Yes, we had a lot of great questions. We'll get to as many of them as we can. And this isn't really a question, but we got actually some good feedback from a lot of folks, Jim and Christian Orem at Yangon being one of them. Talked about, I guess you guys might be getting a lot of shtick, but I guess I just wanted to say that I appreciate what you're doing and we'll be sticking with you. So there's one strong vote of confidence.
That's great. Hey, Rod, can you do me a favor? Check the mute function. I don't think
you have mute on everybody. We're getting heavy breathing.
Yeah.
That's not
my breathing.
I know it's not. Okay, here we go.
Line?
Yeah, I got some others I could mute here. Okay. That should take care of the breathing. Okay, great.
Guys, that was not my breathing.
Okay.
Okay, so let's jump into the questions. Srini from Indiana, are you short KO? Also, is there a time frame when this target will be reached per the model? Thank you.
Yeah, so Coke is a Coke is something we've talked to our hedge fund clients about, let me put it that way. The $12 price target is a valid price target. The reason I mention that, I'm still getting that breathing, Rod.
Yeah.
The reason I mentioned the KO was because it's an example of something that you wouldn't expect to see if the market is healthy, and something you certainly wouldn't expect to see if we're in an ongoing bull market. So to me, that's interesting. The $12 target's also interesting in that it's based on it's not based on Fibonacci. It's based on one of my proprietary magnets. And the rules involving magnets, meaning that $12 level was not adequately tested way back when it was created. And so it's a price level that, in according to my model, it must be revisited. So it's just a matter of when. The answer to that would be a pretty loose window. It's basically between 2011 and 2014. But the main takeaway I wanted you guys to understand was that you know, if the market was as healthy as everyone, or not everyone, but a lot of the bulls seem to think it is, then I wouldn't be generating a $12 target on Coke.
Okay, thanks, Srini. So the next question is from Christian, actually. At the previous event, you explained that the model believes it's always right. However, the timing can be off, such as in the persistence of the equity market's rally. Can you elaborate and show any examples of where the model has been either incorrect, had an incorrect call, or whether the time between the model's call and the eventual outcome of such a duration to make the call of little value? What percentage of the model's predictions suffer from such timing errors?
Yeah, so I think we covered this before, but I'll cover it again briefly. Probably the best example would be crude oil. We were very bearish crude oil at 140, and I actually had a 147 target. We were bullish crude oil going into the big explosive move to the upside summer of 2008. But once it hit the 140 level, I started to get such bearish inputs in the model and so many multiple sell signals triggering that we flipped to the bearish side of the trade at the 140 level. Well, it backed off a little bit, but then it ended up moving up to the 147 target probably within the next 2 weeks. During that period, actually from the time crude oil hit 140, we had our published, we had published our bearish forecast with a $36 a barrel target, and the time frame was over the next 12 to 18 months. So what ended up actually happening is crude oil not only crashed to 36, but it got there much more quickly than the 12 to 18 month time frame that we had laid out. So, you know, the time frame, those are there's nothing magical about the time frame that I provide for you guys. It's not like I do cycle work that shows very specific dates, whereas, you know, good cycle work might say, we're going to make a market top in some specific market on a certain date or a market low on a certain date. Any dates I give you guys, you should consider that, you know, that it's a zone of weakness or a zone of strength. So add, you know, a day or two, to both sides of the date and just think in terms of, you know, that being a zone where the market's supposed to go up or down according to my model. So, you know, the quick answer is that the fact that the stock market has continued to be as stubborn as it's been, is something that surprises me. But then again, I've never, you know, lived through a period where the government's throwing trillions of dollars against what the model's saying the market should do. So I don't really know exactly what to expect. I do know that in every single instance in the past, regardless of the market, whether it's a currency or commodity, a stock index, individual stock, the model has ended up being right, and ended up being right in a manageable time period. In other words, it wasn't so sloppy that you couldn't make money. And I expect that to happen again. So I don't think there's anything the government or anyone else can do to permanently change the direction that a market wants to trade in. I really don't. And I think my hunch is that they probably will even make things worse. A good example is that, and we'll get to this in an answer to another question on down the page here, is that the stubbornness of this bounce in March, the fact that we didn't follow through on that decline into the first week in February, has actually not only helped the market become bullish, it's made the market much more bearish in my work. So now I have new zones of weakness in April that didn't exist 3-4 weeks ago. So you know, that's kind of typical. So my only advice is that it's not advice. My only comment would be that you guys will see in real time exactly what I'm doing, exactly what I'm telling my hedge fund clients, and nothing's changed. As a matter of fact, the stock market has become more bearish. That coincidentally is another reason why I'm sort of not betting on the catastrophic crash during March. I do think we'll sell off substantially below the February lows in March, but I'm not betting on a catastrophic multi-day crash, because that would leave me sort of scratching my head about these zones of weakness in April. In other words, if you're trading at 680 or below during March, where are we going to be in April? And I'm not really willing to get that bearish yet. So I hope that answers the question.
Okay, the next one from David in Toronto. What is the upside target from the band model foresee for natural gas ETF UNG over the next 2 months?
So I don't really want to go out 2 months, but as you guys know, we got long nat gas. I got long the UNG when it hit our $8.30 limit on the, I think it was March 4th. The first overhead magnet that will be a target into the next couple weeks here will be $8.96. So nothing spectacular, but a nice percentage gain. Let's wait till we get there, and then I'll put out some other targets for you guys. I can tell because of the setup, if the UNG does turn up in this first zone of bullishness according to the model, which is the sort of 12th through the 17th, the same period that the stock market is supposed to be declining, then that will generate some new zones of strength. There's certain times when I can't tell ahead of time what the model is going to be, what sort of future information the model will generate, just simply because the market's going up or down. But in this case, I can tell you ahead of time that that'll be very, very bullish if NatGas can turn up and hit that 896 magnet for us.
So the next one is from Stuart, New York, and you covered some of this, but you may want to comment further. Do you think we'll have a crash like 1987? Can it happen early during the year or in Q4 once the economic data begins to disappoint and companies begin to miss earnings?
Okay, just to clarify one thing before I get into this answer. On the previous question, that $8.96 magnet, that's specific to the UNG, not natural gas, of course. Okay, sorry about that, you guys. So can it happen? Yes. It can happen, and it can happen over the next 10 trading sessions if they follow the 87 sequence. That happens to fit really nicely with my future zones of weakness. I can see in my monthly velocity model that we have the potential to crash. In other words, I track velocity models in different time frames, monthly, weekly, daily, 60-minute, 5-minute, just like I do with my other BAM model. So it shows that we do have the potential to have a full-blown crash in March. As I drill down into my daily and hourly velocity models, I'm not seeing it right now. So if it shows up in, 3 to 5 days, or at least into the 14th, 16th, 17th, something like that, I'll keep everyone posted. The one dynamic that has fallen in place that is an absolute must in order to see a stock market crash is you have to get a cluster of these of price levels that trigger these fast market acceleration zones. And so if you guys follow me at all on Twitter, you'll know notice that I talk occasionally about these break acceleration levels. And what those are is those are price levels where the market normally on its first visit of that price level, it will get support and it will wobble around. But then on the break, it tends to look like a sell program kicking in. So the dynamic that's happened over the past month here is that whereas a month ago we had these different price levels that trigger acceleration, they were spread out by 1,000 points in different time frame models. They've been clustering, they've been collapsing over the past month and a half, and so now you have a situation where instead of just having an acceleration zone and then catching some support and then hitting another acceleration zone, sort of an air pocket, and then catching support, we can literally break through most, if not all, of these in a cascade fashion. So that does look, that does lend credibility to the crash call. Only missing element right now is, like I said, the daily and the hourly velocity readings, and I'll keep you guys posted.
Okay, great. The next one from Khan in Columbus, Ohio. If the model is predicting a crash at some point in the future, should we be playing the market by shorting it? And then he goes on to say, what is an investor supposed to do?
Yeah, well, I'm not going to make any recommendations. You guys know sort of our stance on that. We have to make sure to point out that we're not investment advisors. And that all we're really trying to do here is show you all what we're doing with our money and what we're telling the hedge fund clients. So those of you who are involved in the BAM model portfolio can clearly see that you can't get any more, you probably can't construct a more bearishly slanted portfolio than we have. Matter of fact, that UNG position is the only thing we've done that's betting on something going up, really. So, no, we can't make any specific recommendations as far as going in the wrong direction and losing money. You don't lose until you close the position. And so we have two closed positions in the BAM model portfolio. Both of those were for double-digit gains. And although we're significantly underwater in the other positions in the portfolio, I not only expect those to move rapidly to break even, but to end up, performing very well for us.
Okay, the next one from Alan Morris in Incline Village, Lake Tahoe. In 2008, some ultra-short ETFs did not match the expected returns of the underlying indices. An example, oil and natural gas fell about 40%, but the DUG also fell 19%. The same occurred with SRS and FXP when the ETF short fell more than the index fell. Could this happen again?
Yeah, that can definitely happen again. We were involved in the DUG and actually doubled our money in 2008. So as long as you don't overstay your welcome in these, they can work really well for you. I'm well aware that the ETFs, especially the double and triple shorts, are not designed to be buy and hold plays. I know that. Unfortunately, the market has been fighting the model. We were up over 28% in certain model portfolio positions right out of the gate after our launch in October. But we're trying to catch a 30 to 50% move in the stock market. We're not trying to trade in and out. And so I chose to hold those positions and do nothing. In retrospect, that was a mistake. But as soon as the the volatility indices start to move higher or at least tread water, then the bleeding stops in these ETFs. I mean, the ETFs aren't short 100% stock. They're using derivatives, obviously, to gain the 200 and 300% short exposure. So if you have a declining VIX, you're going to get buried in these ETFs. The nice thing about it is that as soon as the market turns, and especially if it turns hard and the volatility indices start to move up rapidly, the speed at which these ETFs will make back all of the losses, our unrealized losses that we have right now in the ETF positions, will be mind-blowing. As a matter of fact, I made a comment about China today on Twitter that I won't repeat, but I think that we're, the positions that are levered to a short play on China look spectacular over the coming months.
Okay.
Let me just add one more thing, Ron. I'm sorry.
Sure.
So the quick answer is that yes, they can erode, and you can end up a loser even though you've made the call. But I'm not going to allow that to happen. I mean, I'm going to assuming the market tracks the model. People will see email blasts from us, and they'll see us putting price targets into the upside where we'll be taking profits in these ETFs during the day as they trade into the levels. There'll be limit orders on the upside, and as soon as our velocity model says that, the first leg of the decline in stocks, meaning the first leg of the advance in our ultra bear ETFs, has run its course, we'll be heading for the exits.
Okay, the next one from Bill in Van Nuys, California. I believe you are familiar with the work of Terry Laundrie. His T-system projects a high in the S&P sometime around August this year. Is there any way BAM sees this market moving higher into that time frame?
I don't. I mean, my model's showing us making a low into that time frame, so somebody's model's going to invert. And I don't know his track record. I don't know if he thinks his system's subject to inversions or not. Most everybody's are. The nice thing about it is that since the zone of weakness into August, since that data is coming from one of my bigger picture models, my weekly model, we'll have plenty of time as we trade forward over the next couple months to know whether or not that is going to be an inversion. And the only way it can invert is if, in my work, is if we first go down. So in other words, you win either way. If you're positioned short and the market goes through its entire decline that it's going to go through, say, into July, which would be typical if we were going to invert and move up into August, then you'll simply see me taking profits on all ETF positions and flipping trades to the bullish side, because that'll be the early warning. But there's no reason for me to guess that the model might be wrong and that we might trade up into August as I see everything right now.
Okay, there's another part to Bill's question. Is January 10th still going to be a high we are headed, or are we headed higher before we go lower?
Well, we've already gone through that high in certain indices like the Russell 2000. We haven't in the industrials. We have not in the S&P. So it looks to me like we topped today. I've said that a few other times, but we usually are pretty good with knowing when a market is making a high, even if we're simply going to have a decline and then move back up through that high a week or two or a month down the road. So, most of the time when we put out a call on a top, we tend to be pretty accurate. So I actually believe we've been through, this entire rally's played itself out, and that we're going to head straight down.
Okay, this one from Joseph in White Plains. It seems this market will not go down. What do you believe to be the catalyst to drive this market down, and when do you anticipate that happening?
My best bet on the catalyst would be, and this is purely a guess, again, we were strictly following the model, but as I look around at some of the other markets I track, it seems to me like China is extraordinarily bearish compared to some of the other foreign market ETFs I track. also that the Japanese yen is extraordinarily bullish over the coming 2-3 weeks, the exact same period that the stock market looks extremely bearish. So there's a little hint of carry trade unwind in that. And then the surprise that I just that sort of surfaced over the past 2 weeks that really wasn't there before is an incredibly bearish look to the U.S. 30-year bond, all the bonds, but the 30-year. And so I think what we're going to have is a situation where the bond market sells off very, very hard during March, which means interest rates spiking higher. And what that tends to do is that tends to discombobulate a lot of these value models. So in the case of like Elaine Garzarelli is a good example. She does a model that at times has been very accurate in the past and at times has not worked too well. But her inputs involve things like interest rates and things like that. Well, so what can happen is she could be on TV on a Monday and say everything's lovely and it looks great and her model's bullish. And because of the trading in the bond market and rates moving higher, by Wednesday or Thursday of that week, she could come back on and say the sky's falling. It's the end of the world. You got to get out. You got a sell signal. So what that can do is shift institutional money on a dime, and as opposed to our model where it's more fading moves. Some people have reactionary models based on interest rates. So it messes up the valuation. It also can steal some money away from the stock market to where people go seek out yield and bonds and all these other things you guys know about. So those would be my guesses. Some disruption, major disruption from China, much worse news than most of the China bulls anticipate as far as their economy goes or currency related, who knows. And then the extraordinarily bullish Japanese yen causing a carry trade unwind, or a big backup in U.S. interest rates.
Okay, the next one from Brian in Syracuse. I have lost confidence in your model. Where is the crash? And he considers that the recent downturn of 10% is a correction, not a crash, and wanted you to address that.
I would agree. 10% is definitely not a crash. The one nice thing about that move down was that it had a very steep trajectory, and that's really key. A key part of our work is studying the initial leg of an advance or a decline in each fractal model. And that first leg that sets the trajectory sort of sets the character for the entire advance or decline that unfolds after that. So, and you guys can use this in your own trading, maybe you already do, those of you who are traders, and you can basically just snap a trend line along the first trajectory of advance or decline and then move that along to each turning point and give yourself a pretty good idea of where the potential that the market could, what kind of potential the market has to make a big move during the next period of weakness or strength. So as far as the crash call and losing confidence, I understand that completely. There's nothing I can do about the fact that the market has seems to want to defy gravity. All I can do is, stick to my guns, look for places to exploit the market. And in my mind, I feel real comfortable, even though I'm underwater in this model portfolio in multiple positions. I feel real comfortable that all that will correct itself in a big hurry once we roll back over.
Okay, so Jian from the Woodlands, do you think there's a possibility that we go to 1,200 in the SPX?
It's like 50 points above the January high, so anything's possible. But as I said, I think we topped today, and I think we're heading straight down from here. I actually added to some positions today when I sent out a tweet and sent out an email blast to hedge fund clients calling a top midday. So all I can do is put my money where my mouth is and hope that this isn't going to be the first time in 90-year history of the model that the market just refuses to track with the model. I think we're about to see some really dynamic moves here during March and April.
Okay, the next
in
one.
In our favor, not up in our favor.
Exactly. So the next one, Jim, from Yannick in France. In your last conference call, you mentioned that gold and silver would be subject to a correction. Due to recent gold strength, is this view still valid?
Gold did rally a little bit, but then kind of has been a little bit lackluster lately. The forecast for gold and silver has not changed. I would expect gold and silver to get hit hard during March and April, and I still have a target in gold of sort of the 880 to 926 range, and think we can get there in the next in the coming weeks.
Yes, Philip in Santa Cruz, California adds to that one, asks about gold stocks and foreign bond funds, and then he goes on to ask, can the dollar rally significantly with the government creating dollars as fast as it can?
Yeah, so I want to avoid talking about the fundamentals about what the government's doing or whatever. There's a lot of things that I'd actually encourage everyone to try to go out on the internet and read as much as they can about the mechanics of dollar, the flows of currencies, and specific to the U.S. dollar. And what you'll find is, if we were to have a situation where foreign markets are as bearish as I think they are, and it's not my opinion, of course, everything I passed along to you guys is based on the model, but if the foreign markets are as bearish as the model says they are, then all of this money that's flowing out of the United States and into foreign markets, people with mutual fund money investing in Brazil or China or wherever, if risk comes back into this market and the volatility starts to ramp up like our model is saying it will, then a lot of that money comes fleeing back into the United States, and those dollars are repatriated, and that shows up as demand to buy dollars. So it's not all about the U.S. government and spending and the U.S. economy and all these things that are more typically talked about in the mainstream press. You really have to look outside of that and look at some of the mechanical things that happen in currency markets, I think, to understand why our model is as bullish the U.S. dollar as it is over the coming years, because there's absolutely no question that it is just phenomenally bullish, and the only two markets that are currency markets that are bullish in our work are the yen and the dollar, and those are the preferred carry trade currencies. So this just looks to me like a collapse of risk, and if you look at public sentiment to risk taking, especially when the public is backstopping banks and brokers these days, you could see where, intuitively it makes sense for public outrage to create a deleveraging and less risk-taking in those groups. So it sort of makes sense to me. That's, strictly guesswork. All I can tell you guys is the dollar is extremely bullish in my work. Now, it's not going to go straight up. We're going to have some sharp pullbacks along the way, and as a matter of fact, I need to see sometime in maybe late March, I'd like to see a pullback all the way to maybe 78.50 level in the dollar index, but that would just trigger even more powerful buy signals that would send us send the dollar up on its next leg toward our target of $1.28, which is pretty mind-blowing number considering how bearish the world's been on the dollar.
Yeah, I think we've hit a common theme here. Phil, in Hervey Bay, Australia, asked for a medium-term outlook in the major currencies, and then he goes on to ask for a medium-term outlook for gold and silver, and does the model see a tradable bottom for these metals in 2010, or will that occur in 2011 or as some other analysts are predicting?
So we already covered the currencies and gold and silver both as far as tradable bottom. If we can start to really move around in gold, in other words, not just to couple dollar range here and there. Big $20, $50, $100 ranges spreading out over, you know, 4 to 7 trading sessions. Then that would make it worthwhile for me to make a recommendation, maybe try to get long the GLD or the SLV in the model portfolio for a trade within the downtrend. But and so that can happen during 2010, but I wouldn't anticipate us having any interest in being long the precious metals for, you know, at least a month or more. And the theme I'm seeing is sort of a deflationary theme first before we have any shot at this big inflationary scare that so many people keep talking about.
So, Jim, one more from Phil, if you want to answer this one. Wants an outlook of what the mall is telling you into late 2010. And he goes on to talk about how the projections in March were not achieved.
Well, we're barely into March, so we don't know the answer to whether or not the targets in March have been reached yet or achieved. So we'll have to wait and see on that one. As far as 2010, as I said, the model just within the past 2 weeks has generated new bearish, extremely bearish windows into one in particular that stands out into the 8th of April. And we also have generated a very nasty bear window all the way out into October, November 2011. So basically, the trading action that happened and into the January high this year, and then the rollover down into that February low, that helped us generate data. We captured data from that trading activity that's projecting new an extension of this bear market at least into the fall of 2011. So things keep getting more and more bearish, not more bullish, and my S&P 529 target in my mind is just, it's a matter of time, and I'm not talking, you know, 5 or 10 years, I'm talking a matter of months, or, you know, at the very worst case scenario I could imagine would be it, you know, dragging into the fall of 2011. But we're sticking with our 529 target this year for the S&P cash, and it looks to me like this is, I'm probably giving conservative estimates in the out years for what we're facing here based on what I've seen lately.
Then we got one from Bruce in Singapore. Can you give us some level which we should look out for in terms of bounces during this spectacular crash the BAM model is predicting?
So quick answer is no. The model doesn't work that way. It's not, you know, I can give, provide magnet price levels ahead of time, and we can, you know, assume that this, that the odds favor the market putting the brakes on when it hits those magnets. But depending on how bearish the overall tone is, the market might just slow down. For example, we used the 944 magnet, which is a very important one for this month. The market could just, you know, slow down and wiggle on that magnet for a number of hours or a day and then crash right through it. There's nothing in my work that tells me ahead of time that a market's going to bounce sharply off a specific price level. I have to wait until the market starts to trade, and then I send out alerts, say, an hour or a day ahead of time that a sharp countertrend bounce is coming. So that's when you guys will see things like that, not weeks and months ahead of time.
So Bruce goes on to ask about any triggers for the big drop, and then he mentions the credit situation globally being a contributor, and then goes on to say, or ask, I should say, why is there a sense of sluggishness in the U.S. market, but the Europe seems to be riding higher and higher? Should we see this as a divergence in the markets?
I think it is interesting that the U.K. markets moved to new highs, especially considering how horrible their currency looks in my work. But you know, all kinds of odd things happen, and especially at turning points. You know, you get the last little bit of short covering. You get all kinds of crazy things. And the odder the move, the more likely you are to be at a turning point. That's been my experience.
Okay, well, the last one from Michael in Pennsylvania, is the BAM methodology based on the study of cycles?
No, it's not. It has nothing to do with cycles.
Okay, Jim, that's it for the questions. we ended on an easy one. So
you're
I would like
used,
to
used to my long-winded responses, but that one's an easy one.
Yeah, that was kind of a shocker. So I appreciate everyone joining us on the call today, and I'd like to encourage everyone to visit the dashboard as frequently as possible. You'll notice that we do have a new message box in the sidebar. It's titled From the Desk of J.G. Savoldi, and it allows Jim during the trading day to post messages of what the model is reading at any given time, and you know, can offer comments as well. And I guess that's it. Jim, any parting comments?
No. Appreciate everyone dialing in. Appreciate the patience of the people who have been patient, and understand the frustrations of the people who have not been patient and who are ripping my head off on a daily basis. not a lot of fun, but like I said, I understand the reason for the frustration. You know, hopefully when the dust settles, we'll see the performance in this model portfolio this year being, you know, pretty spectacular, and I will be happy.
Okay, well, that's it. Thanks everyone for your time, and we will talk to you soon.
Great. Thanks, everybody.